Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Dave Suplee is with us. It's been 7 years since he's been on the air, and he's learned a few things since then. Well, a whole lot. He's passing along information about putting solid-state transmitters into transmitter sites. It's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com.
By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com.
And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm here in the Telos Alliance studio. It is a beautiful day here in Nashville after some terrible storms last night and a couple nights ago, too. We had a couple of rounds come through, and a lot of the nation did as well. A lot of the southeast and even the eastern half of the U.S. got a lot of wind and storms and rain the last couple of days, but it looks like we're out of that at least for a little while. I'm excited about this show. First of all, it is another decadal show. It's 590. And it used to be that we made a big deal about doing war stories episodes every 10 episodes. And I didn't really talk to our guest about doing a war story episode, but I got a feeling there's going to be some war stories today. So we'll tune into that in just a few minutes. Let me welcome in my co-host, live and in color from Muckwonago, Wisconsin. It's Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
Hey there, Kirk. So yeah, we had a little bit of wind today too. In fact, I was driving, I picked up my daughter from the bus stop, driving home, and there's some new housing construction going on down the street. And there was a porta potty tipped right over. And I was thinking, boy, I don't want to be that guy. So yeah, we've had a little bit of that going on here too. So, we talk about a crappy situation.
Thank you.
That's my bad. That's my horrible dad joke for the week. You had yours a little while ago. Now I have mine.
I don't have one for you today, but you bring up the porta potty. I'm going to end up having a question for Dave Suplee that he's not aware of. It's just a general contracting type of question. So let's bring him on in. Dave Suplee, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's good to see you.
Hey, good to see you guys. It's been a while. I think, didn't you say it's been 7 years?
It has. You were on the show back around March the 8th of 2014. So that's a little over 7 years.
Seems like it was just yesterday. Well, maybe not. Just yesterday.
You were talking about studio construction techniques and technologies at the time. I think probably you were heavy into some Axia installations and some remodels and things like that.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember it well. And and it's great to be here. So thanks for the invite.
Well, we've got a different topic or a different set of topics to talk to you about. You've been doing a fair amount of transmitter site work, and I'm really curious about some of the tips and techniques you've got to share, some of the challenges that you've come across, when the donkey and the cart got off in the ditch and the transmitter fell over. And these days there are a lot of them are rack mount transmitters. So maybe it wasn't the donkey and the cart and the ditch, but we've got a whole slew of things to talk about. And we've got a bunch of pictures to show and share. And you can talk to us about, things that you found wrong at transmitter sites and think, you know what, if this next transmitter is going to last another 20, 30, 40 years, we're going to make this right. So you did a whole lot of that. Hey, guys, I'll start our show shortly, but our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Nautel, and they do their Transmission Talk Tuesday shows every Tuesday. You need to go to their website at nautel.com/webinars and check that out. And I think we've got a quick video clip here that'll give you an example of what they talk about on Transmission Talk Tuesday.
Speaking of ice falling on things and specifically personal safety, which we'll probably get to in a little bit, I have a rule that I think everybody should follow, or if you're new to cold weather country, pay attention to this. Always wear a hard hat around your towers when they have any ice on them, especially if you have FMDs or any sort of antennas on the tower, or even an AM tower. Because the ice will fall off and eventually clock you or whoever else is on the ground.
And ice is a problem actually in most parts of the country, even in the South. We get ice on our towers in Mississippi from time to time because it's generally colder up there than it is on the ground. So Transmission Talk Tuesday, check it out at nautel.com/webinars. Even though Transmission Talk Tuesday is specifically not a webinar, it's a roundtable discussion. Sure, they have some expert guests, but you also get to participate. And I was very honored and pleased to be able to participate this past Tuesday with Jeff Welton and Chuck Kelly. So that was a pleasure to be on that show. Hey, next week you won't have to put up with me, so go on and get yourself registered at nautel.com/webinars. Okay, it's time for the show. And Dave Sapli is here. Chris Tarr is here. And Dave, why don't you just kind of give us a little elevator speech? What have you been up to lately, including some older transmitter sites that definitely need some improvements?
I've been up to all kinds of stuff. I mean, we've been changing out. Of course, I'm very fortunate. A company that I work for, Cumulus, has been reinvesting in their business, and we've been buying a lot of new transmitters. And to the point where in the Harrisburg and York markets, where I'm most involved, we've replaced all of our transmitters, except for I think we have one that's over 10 years old. But all the rest of them, and they're all solid state now. So we've managed to replace all of our high power transmitters with new ones, and we've learned a lot in the process. And we have also been doing some studio work, among other things. But the transmitters has been interesting. And I think the first picture was kind of that I sent along would be a good place to start, which is
So say your
boss has decided that it's time to replace the transmitter, finally.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's a good opportunity to clean up some of the issues that maybe are lingering, because you can say, gee, I'd love to replace, you know, my old CCA with this brand new Nautel, but you know, you got to take a little better care of them than you had taking care of the old one. We want to tighten up the buildings a little bit. We want to get the water that seeps in off the floor. You know, we want to just maybe some air conditioning might be in order. So it's a good time to go through your plan.
I sent the link along to Suncast and didn't give much other warning though. So I'm Suncast. Okay. If you've got those pictures handy, if you can get them up, we can go ahead and start with number one. Ah, there we go. All righty. Thank you, Suncast.
This is the outside of a building at a location not to be named, but it's we could see daylight from the inside out, which I believe is the second picture of that group, which is looking outside from the inside, where you can see daylight through the concrete.
Oh,
right there in the middle.
is that water expansion damage that caused that block to break out?
I assume my guess is it's probably a foundation issue because of the cracks in the floor as well. You know, I think it was just, now it does look like there's been, you know, just the discoloration of the block would indicate that there's been some moisture there. But whether that's a result of just it being a an open environment or the building settling, but I think it's mostly building settling.
Gotcha.
So you know, that was a site that after a little bit of investment, and not a huge investment, but we were able to. So the third photo in that group shows the outside where it's now all nice and sealed up. And we did one more thing with the site, which is on, we actually put in air conditioning, which I think is the fourth and fifth photo.
Okay.
Cleaned up the inside.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, you know, the air conditioning for a small transmitter, and this is a small one, this was only a 500 watt transmitter, it did not require a lot, but you just can't sit them, you just can't run them in an uncontrolled environment. The components just do not do well with it. They also, the solid state transmitters like a little heat in wintertime.
Yeah.
Of course, they like to be cool in summer, but mainly they like to be dry. So,
if we could hang on this picture, I've got questions. And Chris, you jump in too anytime you like here. So I've got questions. First of all, on the settling foundation, how would you determine if you need to do something to jack up or stabilize a foundation that has cracked? Or do you just repair the crack and call it a day? You know, with the crack in the wall and the crack in the floor.
I think it depends on the situation. In this particular case, we decided to just repair it and call it a day because we didn't own the building. We were responsible for maintenance, but it wasn't really our property. You know, we just did the minimum. You know, we did what we had to do to get it to the point where our equipment was protected. You know, if you own the building, you might want to think of the long term and do more of a long haul repair.
In the pictures, this one and the others, I see a lot of big rocks hanging around. Is that previous chopped up foundation or is that natural rocks on the property?
It's a mountaintop, transmitter site in Pennsylvania. So just, you know, rocks everywhere.
All right. And
you have to drive over them to get to the site. Yeah.
Talk to me about the split unit there. You've got an outdoor, right in the foreground of this picture. How do you decide whether to use, you know, some kind of more central air conditioning or a split unit like that one?
Generally the mini split units are great for a lower power installation. You know, if you're looking at maybe, you know, up to about 2-3 tons or so, you get anything larger than that, then you probably should consider, a package unit, a wall mount or a ground mount package unit. Generally that's been my experience that the smaller ones work really, and the mini splits work really well for a smaller, a lower power installation where you don't really have a huge amount of heat load, but you do want to keep it controlled and comfortable. And they're very energy efficient. I replaced the heating system in my house, which was electric baseboard, believe it or not, from the 1960s, with a mini split unit, and a central air handler, which I had central air conditioning, and this is doing both heating and air, and my electric usage, my power bill stayed about the same because of the cost of electricity, of course, with our friend inflation, but my power consumption went down by about 40% most months.
Chris Tarr is in the house. Chris, I wonder if you could address your use of these mini splits. You know, when I got to travel the world with Telos, I saw a lot of mini split air conditioners in people's houses, apartments, and in some commercial applications, smaller ones, of course. And in Mississippi, even where it's really hot and humid, we have put mini splits in a couple of transmitter sites where we're using solid state transmitters, maybe a 5 kilowatt or a 3 kilowatt transmitter, solid state. And so they seem to be keeping up. Okay, what's been your experience, Chris, if any?
Well, you know, the first round of mini splits we had were those, they're almost like heat exchanger types. And the issues with those is they don't run when you get below about 40 degrees. They don't work. So you have to be very careful about that. Make sure you have some that are rated to be able to operate under, you know, lower temperatures. Because obviously the inside of the building in those situations sometimes still stays plenty warm and you need that air conditioning. But when it's cold outside, you know, you have that issue. Now, you know, when you use the, you know, the standard compressors, you can do the cold air kits and things like that on them. But, you know, I find them to be very, I like them because of the space savings that you get from them. But yeah, they just have to be very careful with them because a lot of them use this heat exchanging thing, which is a little bit different from the standard compressor. And they tend to be a little more finicky. But I want to go back to the building you had showed. I don't know if Suncast got those pictures that I sent him.
Yeah, he's ready.
But
he's
I had something similar to what he was saying, although I had a transmitter building that was falling into a swamp. So if you could, Suncast, cool. Put up, you can see daylight right there. A lot of daylight.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
If you go to the second picture, you can see the foundation right there. You can see how bad that was. So what I ended up doing was in that situation, you know, that's not repairable. But it was an older transmitter building that used to have two really large tube-based transmitters, and it's an AM site. And we're down to, you know, one single rack mount transmitter. So I ended up taking where the half of the building that was sinking and tore that entire thing out, tore out the block, used the foundation that was on the solid ground and built just a smaller site on the stable foundation and going with that as a replacement and just having a much smaller site that just had the one transmitter in it in a corner. But you know, I certainly, you know, can empathize with Dave on some of that stuff where, you know, you get to some of these sites and generally they're, you know, the sites that I've inherited, not even generally, but almost in every case are pretty well taken care of. It's just that you get a situation like this and you get the can kick down the road where you go, you know, I don't really want to deal with that right now. It's, you know, it can wait a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And, you know, part of what, you know, part of what I do then, or, you know, is my job is to go in after I started, look at these things and come up with those solutions and say, okay, here's what we're going to do about that. But, yeah, it's amazing what you find. And again, you know, Dave's right. I've got a site where I just put in a brand new Nautel transmitter and it just had air cooling. And now I'm taking the time to put in an air conditioning unit. I'm not going to do a split, but something a little bit different there, but you know, same kind of thing. You know, if we're going to invest all this money in a new transmitter, you know, let's look at building, you know, I had the building wiring done. I had, you know, having the air conditioning done. And once that's done, you don't have to worry about it again for a while. You know, it's going to be set for a long time. And that's just one more, you know, item that went from needing a lot of maintenance all the time to very little, you know, change filters, make sure everything's working. That sort of thing. So yeah, as soon as I saw your picture, I'm like, oh, I got to send Suncast a picture of my building that was falling into a swamp. The AM signal's great because it's in the swamp, but over time, the building, half of it was on really stable ground and the other half was next to the swamp. And it just started to, over the years, sink down in and fall into the swamp.
That reminds me of the song we learned as children, the foolish man built his transmitter site upon the swamp. The foolish man built his transmitter site upon the swamp. Hey, Dave Suplee is our guest. We're going to take a quick time out. Chris Tarr is along here, and Dave's got lots more transmitter tour to take us through. And we're going to see, you know, some newer stuff too. Not just old cracked up buildings. We're going to see cooler new stuff too. Our show is brought to you in part by my friends at Angry Audio. The website's angryaudio.com and Angry Audio. You know, they have their own line of stuff like this fantastic headphone gizmo right here. Oh, what a great headphone amplifier that is. And these headphone disconnectors. So you got talent that gets up and forgets they have the headphones on. Well, this just comes right apart. It's like a MagSafe connector. And it goes right back together. And that way you don't rip your cables out. You don't have cables to repair. You just have a magnet to put back together. That's called the headphone disconnector. Why we didn't have one of these years ago, I don't know. But, you know, at Angry Audio, they also have the line of Studio Hub products. Because Angry Audio bought Studio Hub lock, stock, and barrel. And they bought all the tooling. They still manufacture the adapters, the famous Studio Hub adapters, in the same factories where they've got the formula just right for getting these cables to be solid and work perfectly. And for example, here's a Studio Hub headphone amplifier. Fits nicely in a Decora box with a Decora cover over it and hooks up with Cat 5 cable with Studio Hub power on it. Another solution that you want to know about is things like this. This is Studio Hub. It's an IHF, or, you know, the -10 consumer RCA connector analog. It'll convert that right up to +4 on this RJ45 connector. So this, you can go through a power injector to power this for Studio Hub, but then this can go into your Axia X node, or your blade, or whatever piece of gear you've got that takes, you know, +4 on an RJ45. It makes hooking up, you know, consumer electronics really easy in your studio. So they make that. They also make this one right here. This converts to, it takes unbalanced in right here. It also takes balanced stereo in either way. And what it gives you out is a digital output. So it gives you AES EBU digital out, and it's powered by the Studio Hub standard power. Lots of cool accessories like this that make wiring your studio a whole lot easier. Check it out at angryaudio.com. It's an easy name to remember. It's a fun website. Problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. Hey, our show is brought to you also in part by Josh Bone. You know Josh. He's the guy that invented Max Connect Wireless. Gary Morrill's here to tell you how much he loves it.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
I checked it out. I got two up here. So I got stereo. I got Max Connect for the left channel and Max Connect for the right channel. Now, that's not how it works. But this will get you prioritized data and a static IP address on your choice of the big U.S. carriers like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, or Sprint. Very cool. One of these is a Pepwave brand. The other one that I have here is a Cradlepoint brand. But you need to check this out for your transmitter sites, your remote broadcasts, anywhere that you need data that's reliable. MaxConnect.com. I know it's spelled funny. I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to click on that. We're going to use Max Connect from the NAB show here in a couple of weeks or a week and a half to bring you the SBE National Meeting. And we used that a few years ago. Worked great. And we're going to use it again coming up. Thanks a lot, Max Connect, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right. Chris Tarr is along in Mukwonago, and Dave Suplee is our guest today. We're talking about transmitter sites. Dave, you mentioned that you're all solid state transmitters. You know, a few years ago, Nautel ran that promotion where they said, save the tubes. And I don't think it's working. I think the tubes are going away. What do you have any tubes left in your inventory?
I have tubes in my backups on some of the stations, but that's about it. And we actually just replaced a transmitter that we actually put one in February. That was the last tube main transmitter we had, and it had a tube that was 14 years old, believe it or not. We were fortunate enough. It was a 25 kilowatt Harris. We were running at it just under 10 kilowatts, and it had run that way for 15 years. So the tube was just cruising along, but it was starting to go. So we replaced it just in time. But we've had a lot of issues with getting good quality tubes. Let's put it that way. We've had it, you know, many, many times when we would get a tube, it would seem like we'd take 2-3 times, even though the rebuilder would know the transmitters involved. It just seemed like the quality has just been going really downhill over the last, maybe the last 10 years.
Tube rebuilding almost kind of seems like the buggy whip industry from 100 years ago. It's going to be going away.
Well, you know, the Amish still have the horse and buggy, so I don't think buggy whip's entirely going away, but, you know, there's, but, you know, and I'm sure that there's still going to be a few people out there who hang on to them, but it's getting very hard to find good quality tubes. And I think that they're just like making a good buggy whip probably was a skilled craftsman type of position where you had to learn it. I think the same is true of rebuilding tubes. And I think maybe some of the expertise that really, made them work well may no longer be available.
You're talking rebuilds as far as the knowledge to be able to rebuild. Are there some new tubes still available or not?
There are still new tubes available, but you know, unfortunately, the cost of the new tubes is because the demand, of course, is probably not what it once was. The cost of a new tube is very, very high. Mm-hmm. The cost of rebuilds has gone up, but the cost of new tubes is, you know, extremely high. So I think a lot of people have shied away from them. And the other thing to keep in mind with the tube is that you're trying to silence my phone here. The tubes are consumable. So most companies do not want to CapEx them. They're an expense. On the other hand, a replacement module for a transmitter, you could potentially capitalize in some cases, although most cases are going to be a repair, but you're hopefully not going to be doing that every, you know, 10 to 18 months, depending on the tube life. I think that's a consideration too.
Hey, Chris Tarr, I wonder how your mix of tube and solid state is going. You take care of a number of transmitter sites as well, just like Dave does.
Yeah, and we, you know, we still are very much tube-based. You know, we've got a lot of smaller stations. You know, I have several solid state, but the bulk are tube. The upside is that I have probably one of the best transmitter guys on the planet, used to work for, I believe it was CCA, who works with me, and, you know, has done a fantastic job. We primarily, our tube transmitters are CCAs, and he can just make these things work. He's like a savant. It's amazing how, you know, how good he is with these. So, you know, we've been finding, though, the same issues that everybody else has with, you know, trying to find decent used tubes and even new tubes. And we've been slowly, you know, the CCAs generally have tube IPAs. So we've been going through and also, you know, converting a lot of those to solid state. But, you know, we're well aware of the fact that, you know, we're going to have to start converting these to solid state in the near future. But we're trying to be smart about it one at a time. And, you know, as we find, you know, find good deals on transmitters, you know, sometimes manufacturers, you know, get to the end of the year or whatever, and would like to get a couple more sold. We'll, you know, we go through that, but Yeah, you know, Dave's right. You know, the tubes have been hit or miss. You know, we can go sometimes, you know, we'll have a good run of several tubes that are great, and then we'll have, you know, three or four were, you know, 5 months in and they fail. So, you know, it's a frustrating thing, but that's kind of, you know, the price you pay nowadays, you know, if you're going to go with tubes. And I really have not had a lot of luck with new tubes either. You know, some of the quality is hit or miss with those as well. Because again, it just depends on the manufacturer and where it comes from, and that sort of thing. But, you know, it just, you know, you can do some things to, you know, to kind of ease that pain. You know, as Dave said, you know, I've got one or two transmitters where, you know, as I've moved these around, I've put, you know, larger transmitters in for smaller applications, just so that the tube kind of loafs along and you can get a couple of years out of a tube, and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's some things you can do, good filament management, that sort of thing, to kind of increase the life of the tubes. But, you know, for smaller stations like what I have, it's just not financially possible, you know, to replace all of them. So we, you know, we do the best we can.
Hey, Dave, as you're replacing transmitters, tube transmitters with solid state ones, what are you noticing now about any changes in best practices for the installation themselves, the environment in the building and such as that? How are you adapting environment and building and best practices for this new world where you're almost all solid state?
Well, I think we're taking a look at making sure that we are putting them into a controlled environment. When you used to be able to, you know, vent from the outside, unless you're really in a hot area, you know, here in Pennsylvania, we could draw in outside air and exhaust it, you know, with a fan. And in some cases we had air conditioning that would, I think Continental used to recommend you would draw in outside air and air condition it and exhaust it, as a way of maybe saving a little bit of money in your air conditioning costs. So we're taking a look at that, and installing, making sure that we have a sealed environment or a closed system to get as clean of an environment as possible, and also for quality control. And of course, you need to look at the electrical system because, you know, there's some pretty old electrical systems out there that are not quite up to standard. You may need to change breaker size. You certainly should look at the conductors and make sure you've got the proper conductor size. There's really not that much difference, you know, between, it's pretty much the same standards that you used before. Make sure your hard line is in good shape. It's a good time when you do go to replace a transmitter. It's a good time to solve a lot of problems that maybe have existed for a while that you had not been able to do anything about. And you could say, well, gee, now that we're doing this, let's take care of this problem while we're in there. And a lot of times that's a good opportunity to get it done when the company is, or your employer is in the mood to spend a little bit of money on the transmitter. You say, well, we're going to do this. Let's also fix these issues as well. It'll help make your investment last a little longer.
Yeah. When I was with Intercom, that's how we did it. Is I looked at the opportunity when we replaced the transmitter to look at it as do it as an entire project. You know, does remote control need to be upgraded? Do we need new processing? Right. Are there other things? And then put that together as an entire capital project, you know, transmitter processing, you know, anything else that we needed to really make that site work. And I even do that now, even though, you know, I report directly to the owner, so we don't really have a formal capital thing or anything. But I generally look at that as, you know, a site by site project, you know, the place that I just did where we upgraded to Nautel and HD, I did a remote control at the same time and some other things. So yeah, that's a good opportunity to really look at everything and package it together and, you know, get the whole site in good shape for sure.
One other thing to consider when you're upgrading your transmitter is most new solid state transmitters have a network port on it. So if you're able to get it some kind of internet connectivity back from your studio to the transmitter site, the nice thing is that you can sit there from anywhere and look at your transmitter and see, okay, if there's an alarm, you'll see, oh, this fan has failed or this module has failed or what have you. And you have a lot more information available at your disposal before you even leave to go to the transmitter site. It's a huge benefit, and all of our sites are interconnected that way. So I'm able to, from my office, really from my home, look at everything and see where we are. So it's great visibility that you get from the site, that from the newer transmitters that you never had before.
I'm wondering, you know, some new transmitters, solid state transmitters, come not only with their own network connection, but they have a built-in web server. So at my stations in Mississippi, and I don't always make the buying decisions, but I'm happy with what we have. We have some Nautel transmitters. These have a web interface. We have some Elanos transmitters that also have a web interface. And I'm wondering, when you have a transmitter site, do you use that transmitter's web interface, or do you use SNMP tied into a different remote control system? I'll ask each of you that question. Dave, you first, and then Chris, tell me what your practice is.
I use both. I can use the SNMP. I use the SNMP to tie into the remote control, and I use the web interface if I'm just pulling it, because there's information that's available on the web interface that maybe is not available in the same format as the SNMP, where the SNMP is raw data, but the web interface gives you status. You can get status off the SNMP as well, but it's just in a different format and sometimes easier to get. And you know, you can't read, you can see where your modulation is, if there is modulation on the web interface, and you can't necessarily see that on the SNMP.
Chris?
Yeah, I same as Dave. I lean on SNMP a whole lot. One of the projects I'm doing right now is consolidating all of our sites onto SNMP with Burke. And I'm about halfway there. I do the web interface obviously is richer. There's some more information there. Also, though, the downside of that is some are better than others. Mm-hmm. And I won't name names, but you know, I've got a mix of Elanos and Gates Air and Nautel. All of them have web interfaces, but I generally lean into SNMP a lot. And I've gotten to the point where it pulls all of my STL gear, it pulls network connections, it pulls servers, you know, station servers and temperature. And believe me, the SNMP on my Burke system gets a workout.
I'd love to see it. You got to give us a tutorial on that sometime. A tour, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hooked that up. I promised some pictures, and we're going to take one more break before we come back to Dave Suplee giving us a picture tour with the rest of the pictures that he's got. But before we take a break, Dave, I wanted to see if there's anything else we wanted to cover with regard to solid state, the environment, the HVAC grounding. Is there any differences in grounding? Any differences in how you protect or provide for a solid state transmitter that is different from the tube transmitter? And is a solid state transmitter, is it any more finicky or less finicky? What are your comparative thoughts there?
I haven't really found them to be any more or less finicky. I think it's just, it's the same. If a good installation of a tube transmitter is a good installation of a solid state, obviously the climate control, I think, is maybe a little bit more critical with solid state. But beyond that, there really isn't a whole lot of difference. You know, you want to do surge suppression on your tube transmitters as well, because they're just as susceptible to lightning. They're maybe not as susceptible to certain things, but they are susceptible to lightning just like any solid state transmitter. So I think that the same good practices apply in both cases.
All right, we're going to be back with more of our picture tour and Dave Suplee talking about that with Chris Tarr. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, whenever you do install a new transmitter, it's a good idea to make sure you can monitor its modulation cleanly and accurately, especially now in the world of HD radio, HD 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. You want to make sure those are good. And Inovonix has solutions for all of that from Broadcasters General Store. Let's take a look.
Hi, this is Gary Lerman. I'm Sales and Marketing Manager from Inovonix. I'm joined here by our President and CEO, Ben Barber. And we're here to tell you about two new products that we're very excited about. They're HD modulation monitors, the model 551 and 552. And Ben's going to take us through some of the features. Ben, what can you tell us about these?
The 551 has the big display, 7-inch touchscreen display. You can look at different parameters instantly by walking up to it and touching it, getting information that you need. It also has the LED displays for FM total modulation, left, right, FM, HD 1, 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that the 551 has is that it has full-time audio outputs on studio hub connectors on the back, both analog as well as AES digital. So you've got FM, HD 1 through 4 there full-time. The 552 doesn't have the display, doesn't have the metering, and doesn't have the full-time audio outputs, but the web interfaces are identical for remote viewing and monitoring.
Great. Thanks very much, Ben. These products are going to be available in January 2022. Contact us at InnovonixBroadcast.com for more information. Thanks very much.
And these are available, of course, from Broadcasters General Store. You can go to their website at bgs.cc or call them at 352-622-7700. Yep, I got that number memorized, and I probably have for the last 35 years at Broadcasters General Store. They can give you not only a quote, the best sharp pencil quote you're going to find. They can also give you really good information about delivery and delivery method, and give you different costs for different shipping. And they're really good at this, but they're just also just good to talk to on the phone. So check them out, Broadcasters General Store, 352-622-7700. Thanks a lot to Dave and Carrie and Jessica and Buck and everybody, Hugh and everybody else at Broadcasters General Store for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. I do wish you'd give them your business. Let them bid on what you're buying for your stations. All right, Kirk Harnack here along with Chris Tarr, and Dave Suplee is our guest. It's been 7 years since he's been on with us, and I think he's learned a couple things since then. Dave, I thought we'd go back to our pictorial tour of your stations that you wanted to show us. I'm not sure where we left off. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Go ahead.
Right there. Yeah, that's, you know, just like you would maintain your home to keep you know, the elements, the outside elements out, you really need to make sure that our transmitter sites are the same. And it's like you said, it's easy to kick the can down the road. And sometimes, you know, we're always guilty of that, but you try to keep the water out. And this was a case in this building where we were getting some water coming in through that chimney, and it would then leak across the floor and had to be dealt with. The next photo is the outside. You know, you don't sit there in your living room watching football with well, maybe you do sit there with the window open, but generally if it's blowing rain, you don't have the window open. So this is open to the outside, and who knows how long it had been that way, but part of the result was the next photo, which was they had carpet in this transmitter site for some reason. Reason that escapes me, but it was saturated. So a little bit of a water problem in this particular one. The next one I have is, you know, what do you do with the old transmitter when it's time for it to retire? This was a beautiful transmitter that was in Harrisburg, and we removed it. It had been out of service for quite some time, but it had actually been rebuilt at the Harris factory in the early 80s. So it had it was a transmitter from the early 50s. For whatever reason, they decided to rebuild it. Of course, you couldn't get good 833As anymore, so they quit using it. We wound up donating it to a local ham operator who took it out of the building, and he must have had a big garage because that was a big beast.
Either that or no wife.
Well, now he did have a wife actually, and
he kept
telling us that his wife wouldn't let him bring any more stuff home, but he kept bringing more stuff home. So, I think we had a Raytheon that we were trying to get him to take as well, but he wouldn't take that one.
Chris, Chris Tarr is a ham radio operator. Chris, I wonder what your beloved spouse would say if you hauled up in the driveway with this in the back of the truck and said, "Well, look what I got."
That would not only be a no, that would be a oh hell no.
This one was a beautiful transmitter. I mean, the Gates catalog had a picture of the engineer standing inside the thing. Supposedly you could work on it inside with it operating. Not that you'd want to, but it's a big beast.
They were a different breed back then. Engineers working inside of their transmitters when they were on. I did the same thing. I had a BTA 1R1 that I needed to get rid of. Same thing, put an ad out and said, "Hey, if there's any, ham operators that want these," and they love them because they make great rigs on 160. He came and got it. It's like, I love doing that because that's the easiest, no hassle way of getting rid of old gear. I just it's free. If you come get it, I have to lift a finger then.
Oh my goodness.
So, one of the other things to take a look at with your sites, of course, take a look at the wiring. It's a good time to clean up old wiring.
What is going on here? Oh my goodness. Dave, tell me the sad story.
I think this actually was a studio location, and that was, I believe, the telecom rack, the telecom area.
Okay.
But it just seemed like a good way to make a point, but you can get in and clean up a lot of the electrical or clean up a lot of the studio wiring. And then of course the next one is the electrical system, which obviously needs some attention as well. This was another transmitter. This actually was a transmitter site. And that's all live. I mean, the conductor that you see coming out of that cabinet on the left side of the picture was live. So I'm not sure what they were thinking there, but it was kind of scary sight to walk around.
I'll make an observation about sites like this where things start to get bad, then they get worse. And over, 20, 30 years, they get really bad. And see if you guys agree or disagree. The first, because most sites start out nice and then somebody does something to really cut a corner. It's just going to be temporary until I come back next week. And they never come back. Or they don't know what they're doing. They jackleg it in one way or another. But as soon as you do something that's really egregiously wrong or sloppy, it gives permission to the next people behind you to be just as bad. And, if that's what this site is all about, okay, then I don't need to be needy with that.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I think that, but I think in this particular case, the site had been vandalized and then they sort of repaired it, and then it was vandalized again, and they sort of repaired it, and they never really went back and did the repair after that.
The vandalization, do you think it was related to y'all didn't play my song, or we want the copper? What do you think is related to?
I think it was related to the copper. I think it was people looking for meth money.
Good thing they don't have that in Wisconsin.
But you're right. You let those, you let them go. It just seems like the problems perpetuate themselves. Like the next one I have is just good.
I was going to say before we go on is there's obviously radio station temporary, which is a lot of what you see there. And then there's also, I've found too, that a lot of times we don't go back and at least try to understand why some of that stuff is the way it is. Sometimes we chalk it up to sloppy work when there may be, even though we don't see it, a logical reason for doing it. And I've run into that a couple of times too, where I went, "Oh, I'm going to undo that. That's crazy. Why would you do that?" And then I talked to the person who did it and went, "Oh, no. Here's what I was thinking about this." And, it's not pretty, but it had to go that way in order for it to work. And so sometimes you got to be careful about that too, and just assuming that, somebody was sloppy with work.
And that's true. And sometimes, the hands are tied because of finances or timing or what have you. And absolutely. There's always There's more, there's always more than one side to any given story, and the picture doesn't always tell everything.
Good deal. Let's look at the next picture, Dave.
When I was talking earlier about cleaning up, issues in the past, this hard line was very suspicious looking in this particular case. And in this site, we managed to go through and replace the hard line and replace the switch, which didn't function very well or had to be, it wouldn't even travel. This particular switch wouldn't even travel by the time we got to it. But it's a good time to get those things done. And the next one is the same site. And it looked like the line had been damaged, maybe in a fire or something, or it was pretty, pretty rough looking line.
Mm.
So we were pretty, pretty suspicious of how well it actually was working or if there were, there were some viscera issues on the station. It wasn't extreme to the point where it prevented things from working, but things were just not right. So we took the opportunity to replace.
I have a question. Does that clock on the wall, does it work? Do you remember?
I do not believe that clock on the wall has worked since about maybe 1965.
I was going to say 60 something.
Love it.
Oh my God. What transmitter is that we're looking at the top and back of there?
That is a transmitter that is no longer in that particular site. That was replaced with that was the backup transmitter, but we put we had a Continental in that site as a main, and we swapped that out with a fax. That transmitter is a BE703i, I believe. 705i.
Oh, that's actually fairly new. Yeah.
It's fairly new, but it had a hard life. It looked really rough.
Yeah.
It was a solid state transmitter that in a pretty poor environment, unfortunately.
All right. Any more pictures?
No, that's all that I sent.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, that certainly gives us a base. Dave, you've got some transmitter sites that you have really had to clean up. Those are some of the roughest that I've seen, or at least they're in that category.
And those really were the exceptions. I mean, most of the sites that I've done, they're well taken care of. I just wanted to just show a couple of, I don't know necessarily the horror stories, but a couple of the more extreme examples. But they can be cleaned up, they can be fixed. It just takes an investment in time.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind is, and this was the case with some of the ones I have too, where over the years you went from having full-time engineering staffs to one person handling several sites, and unfortunately that stuff kind of falls by the wayside, that kind of general maintenance and cleaning and things like that. And so it takes a concerted effort to really get in and just set aside a day or whatever to clean out. And I've been doing that with ours, where I have our coworkers in our other markets and everything. We just kind of set up one day a month, go out, we sweep and that kind of thing. And it's just really easy, when you have all these things going on, to get distracted. And that site maintenance kind of out of mind. If everything's working, no reason to go back and do anything. So totally understandable. When I see those sites, I kind of look at that and go, yeah, I've seen a lot of them like that. Some of mine are probably guilty of that, because that's really what happens. Is it just, it used to be where you'd spend all your time out there, after you're done aligning the cart machines and replacing the styli, that you would go out there and do some maintenance. And now it really gets to be hard to just do some of that basic stuff. It's always good when you can get a fresh start, because I also think that motivates you to kind of keep it that way. When you see a site in that condition, before you made the changes, you kind of go, well, it's not going to get any worse than it is now. And so you just don't really think about it. But then, when you actually go through and do all of these new things and shine it up, first of all, it doesn't seem so overwhelming to keep it in good shape as it does when you look at it beforehand and go, oh man, I don't even know how I'm going to make a dent in that. But once you do, then all of a sudden, it becomes easier to kind of maintain that, that stuff in better condition. But yeah, I certainly, I'm not with Kirk on this one. I think I've seen plenty, a lot of them, a lot like that. And I think that's probably more common than not in a lot of cases.
And something that kind of comes to mind when you brought that up is a lot of times it's easier to justify spending the time at the transmitter site cleaning up a site when you are doing things like a transmitter install. Because a lot of times, you know, then you can say, hey, I'm on a project, I'm working on this. And otherwise, you know, we all know we tend to get pulled in every direction when we're available. And it's hard to sometimes be able to focus or have the opportunity to go out and focus on keeping your transmitter sites clean when you have, you know, people who have computer issues or whatever things that need to be done back in the building. So it's, you know, we're not always, Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, you know, it's, you know, you get out to the transmitter site and, you know, 30 seconds in, somebody needs a printer fixed and they're like, well, right. You know, you got to come back and do that. Cleaning is not a big, you know, that'll wait. And yeah, you get right. tied up and you get distracted and, or worse yet, they're going, why are you spending so much time out at the transmitter site? So yeah, I mean, that's a great opportunity. Plus then too, a lot of times you can get a dumpster or, you know, whatever, and really sink in and get rid of the 30 years worth of junk that has been accumulating out there, because that's the other thing. So we also know a lot of general managers and people go, take that junk out to the transmitter site, store it there.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of transmitter sites that are used for equipment storage, the warehouse, you know?
Yeah. I am not going to use that AP teletype machine or the ISDN codec anymore. We don't need to keep them.
Yeah. It'll still be junk at the transmitter site. If it's junk at the studio, it'll be junk at the transmitter.
You know, and that's a good way to put it. And so we all have to remind ourselves of that sometimes. And I have my own collection, but we're trying to go through it and rid ourselves of things. If you haven't, you know, if it hasn't been used in the last 2 or 3 years, is it ever going to be used again? Probably not.
And that said, I got to say though, it's kind of fun to go to a transmitter site and find a treasure trove of stuff. Oh, look at this microphone. Look at these old Canon mic connect. Oh, look at that transcription turntable. I mean, it is kind of fun to find old stuff, even though you really may not be. Of course, you know, some of that stuff you could sell. Yeah, look at that. Look at you and your sexy meter, Chris. Yeah.
That is a audio meter. There we go. You can see it now. This came out of WTIC in Hartford in their transmitter building. Nice. They had a whole.
Did Chris's audio go away or was that me?
I think he went away.
There we go.
Chris, your audio went away. Okay.
It was just like what you were saying, you know, it's an old transmitter site and they had all this, you know, all this old gear sitting there that, you know, will never get used again. And the guy, the engineer at the time, I looked at this and went, oh, wow, this is fantastic. He said, well, here, take it as a souvenir. And I said, oh, really? I mean, you know, come on, this is really, he's like, do you think we're ever going to use this again? I think it's okay. You know? So that same kind of thing, but yeah, I agree with you. I love going to those old sites and seeing all that old gear. It's really cool.
Dave, we're going to have to take one more break and then we'll have our tip of the week after that. But before we do that, Dave, maybe you could touch on this topic of attrition that has you a bit worried, concerned, that where are the next engineers coming from? Is it going to be a problem? Is it going to be our problem? Whose problem is it going to be? What do you want to do about it now? What are your thoughts on that topic?
You know, it's something that it's always concerned me or has been concerning me for the last few years. Many of us, probably the majority of engineers that I know are around my age. And many of us are, you know, approaching retirement age, or some cases we're still working in beyond retirement age. You know, where are the next group of engineers coming from? You know, I don't know. Our company is, you know, obviously looking for people. I know that in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters is now offering paid memberships to SBE as well as training for engineers to get people in the industry, because it's a big problem and it's becoming worse. And I think it's only going to continue to get worse until, you know, until we find enough people. I'm not sure where they're coming from. It requires people that are obviously interested in radio, interested in broadcasting. How do we find them? You know, I don't know. I mean, I've recently recruited a young man who's going to be starting with us in the next few weeks who was for the programming side, but he has a technical background. And, you know, maybe those are the sorts of people that are going to be the future for us. We obviously have a lot more IT skills needed than were ever needed before. And that's probably going to continue. And it's probably going to be even, you know, more so down the road, where the hands-on component level work is probably going to become less important, as I think it has, you know, since the time that I've started. We're not out, you know, changing tubes every week, or we're not, you know, replacing the tape heads and aligning cart machines and things like that we once were. So I think that's, it is going to be more of an IT based, but you still have to be willing to do the job. And, you know, in a lot of cases you're on call 24/7, and that's something that can be a challenge to overcome. So I don't have the answers. I just think it's something we need to be constantly in the recruitment mode and looking for people all the time. And, you know, in a lot of markets, a lot of areas, there used to be a lot more assistant engineers than there are now. So, I mean, and that was the training ground for engineers. So without that training ground, where do we train people? How do we train people? I don't know.
Chris, you're young and vigorous and in no chance of retiring anytime soon. So you're not worried about this, are you? Or are you?
No, I am. And as you know, I'm the chairman of the mentor committee for SBE, where we're trying to, you know, to train people. We just reached 100 mentees just recently, which is fantastic. But I worry about the same thing. I mean, I'm not getting any younger, and you know, I've tried to really hard bring people into the business and train them. And, but I think that we're really running into a critical situation here with that, where pretty soon we're going to hit a very bad spot. And, you know, we're starting even now, the kind of the stopgap measures that we're doing with this hub and spoke, with a lot of companies are doing, where, you know, you have one really good senior engineer and then a bunch of technical people kind of spread out. I mean, that's working for now, but it's kind of still a stopgap measure. And we really need to work on bringing people into the fold, and companies. And I've mentioned this many years ago, and in fact, I remember getting in trouble by my bosses for bringing it up. But I think it's on everybody to really move this along. The companies, the broadcast companies, the equipment manufacturers, the regional broadcast associations, to really, you know, make broadcasting visible, to discuss, you know, careers in it, and discuss some of the benefits of doing this. Because if I'm, you know, just getting out of college, I'm going into IT. That's where the money is. You know, I want to work, you know, I can work 9 to 5, and, you know, we've got to get past the point at broadcast companies where the engineer unclogs the toilet, fixes the cars, replaces the tires, you know, that sort of thing. You know, we need to get past that. And, you know, we need to find ways to encourage young people to get into the business. And some of that is rethinking what the job is, and, you know, moving forward and kind of eliminating some of those old stereotypes. So, yeah, I think about it quite a bit, you know, where this is going to go.
We're going to take our last break and be back with our tips of the week. And one thing that we didn't have time to talk about, and this, Dave, I failed completely as my job as host to warn you that I'm expecting from you a tip of the week after this last spot set. But Dave, we didn't get to talk about having more stations than studios and a technology that you've put to use to help make that shuffle really easy and trouble-free. Might be a good tip of the week, but you may have your own too. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends at Broadcast Bionics, where they can outfit your whole studio with stuff that you need to be really interactive with your audience. And you, as the engineer, you bring this up, you show how it can work and can improve your on-air products on all your stations. You can be a hero. Let's check it out from Broadcast Bionics.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments.
Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI. And incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Broadcast Bionics. Check these guys out. Bionics.co.uk, or you can go to their website at bionic.radio. It's not plural there, it's singular in that instance, bionic.radio. And you'll find all kinds of good stuff for your studios. And hey, when engineers get involved in making the whole product better, as we know we are, but when you help out in the studio, man. Yeah, puts you in a good spot, and you're going to like what you get. All right, it's our final few minutes of This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in Nashville, Tennessee. And, oh, you know something I forgot to mention? My tip of the week, and it's every 2 or 3 weeks I mention this, Radio Guide. I just got my brand new one in the mail. It's for March and April of 2022. Lots of great articles about, you know, AOIP and virtualizing the talk show. That's what that camera one from Broadcast Bionics. And I don't know why they do this. Look at this. You near the back of the magazine, there's Chris. What do you think about this nonsense?
Who is that guy?
I don't know.
He's got amazing hair.
A younger me. Look, no glasses. I was wearing contacts or something. Oh, good gosh. But seriously, radio, if you go to the website, radio-guide.com, the thing I like about Radio Guide is you get more in-depth articles about engineering in Radio Guide because they take more room to print their articles. And that means that they can be more in-depth. You get more information about projects and things you want to do. A lot of how-tos in Radio Guide. Okay, I don't know who wants to go first here, but we're going to let's see if we can get Dave Suplee to go for it. Oh, you go. Okay, go ahead. Dave Suplee, you get ready. You're on deck.
That way
you
can think about it.
I'm ready.
First of all, I love the Broadcast Bionic ad because they talk about the on-air competitions. That is such a British thing.
Competitions, you know, yes, competitions.
Yes. My tip of the week, and I was just thinking about this because right before we started the show, I was getting some orders placed for my finishing up my studio build next week. We have a combination of audio over IP and office network stuff, and it all, like in most places, goes into one server room. So my tip of the week is to separate the two networks cabling. And what I do is I put all of the live Axia LiveWire stuff on red network cables. And that way the rule is to anybody who walks in there, don't touch anything with a red cable. So if you've got, you know, somebody in there like a telephone company guy or a network guy or whatever in your room, you know, you say, don't touch anything, you know, plugged in with a red network cable, because that will take something off the air. So, you know, I order blue and red, and the blue stuff is just the regular office network stuff. And anything with a red cable is LiveWire. And that way you can quickly identify, you know, what's probably safe to pull and whatever is not safe to pull.
Good idea. I like that. How do you get organized enough to have enough of the right color cable at hand? Because I tend to have to use what I have because I'm not thinking ahead. Is that my problem?
That is absolutely your problem. Think ahead, my friend. Think ahead. Remember what I said. I was just ordering the stuff before I got on the phone, you know, got on with you today. And this is something I'll be doing on Monday. So I was just on Amazon going, okay, I'm going to need 40 of these. And for, you know, because, you know, you probably overorder, but I've got other sites. So I'll just take them around. And, you know, as things move around or re-add or remove things, you can't ever have too many network cables sitting around.
And the good thing about most IT accessories, wiring supplies, most of them are pretty cheap. Even considered to what we used to use a lot of, you know, metal D-rings, those suckers were expensive. But, you know, more of the wiring supplies for IT, pretty inexpensive stuff as it goes.
Yeah, they are now for sure, because it's become, you know, everybody uses it. So it's not just something specific like, you know, that we buy for our industry. There, it's a commodity now, and you can get them inexpensively anywhere. And just something simple like that makes all the difference in the world, because it's just so, you know, you're not having people going, well, can I pull this? What's going to happen? You know, I mean, you just know if it's got a red network cable, leave it alone.
Is this going to take the printer off, or, you know, WXYZ off?
Right, exactly. I don't care if you take the printer offline. I'm good with that. But, you know, don't pull my, you know, my audio playout server.
All right, Dave Suplee, what is your tip of the week, sir?
I've always found that I need more short patch cables than long than I think. And I don't know why, but that just seems to have been the case. My tip is nothing to do with technical work. It's more just something that I've learned over the years from some advice of a boss that I once had. And that is, when you walk in the door, know what you're going to do today. Every morning, make a plan, or every day before you leave work, make a plan for the next day. It may be a shot 5 minutes after you walk in the door, but you know, that one day out of four that you actually get to do what you plan to do will be a very productive day. So just make a plan, think ahead, and show up for work, be prepared to work.
I like it. Show up for work, be prepared to work. That's like the advice that I've seen in a lot of control rooms. Before you open the mic, be prepared to say something. Be prepared to talk.
That's where I learned it, because I worked on the air at one time. So I learned that from, you know what you're going to say before you open the mic.
Also, it doesn't hurt to also smile, whether you're on the radio or seeing people in person. Doesn't hurt
always
to smile.
I had somebody that told me that too. Always smile when you're reading this particular piece of copy.
That's right.
About Frank's Music Shop, you know.
All right. Dave Suplee, I want to thank you very much for being with us. It's good to see you. We got to make it a little bit more often than once every 7 years.
Well, thank you. It's been great. And I've had a good time. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. So thanks a lot.
I already got a nice compliment. Somebody, I won't mention his name, but somebody texted me on Facebook Messenger. And thanks very much for the info that we passed along today. Appreciate that. All right, Chris Tarr, thank you for being here. Appreciate you taking a time out of your day to join us.
Happy to do it. Always have fun.
All right, good. We have fun too. Next week, we're going to be live from Las Vegas. The NAB show will not have started yet, but I will be at the Public Radio Engineering Conference, or Public Radio Engineers Conference, going on in Las Vegas just prior to NAB. I don't know who my guests are going to be yet. I'm going to take a wild guess and say they'll probably be public radio engineers. So we'll see if we can grab a few public radio engineers and talk to them about what's going on in the world of public radio engineering. All right, we got to go. Thanks. Big thanks to Suncast for all the production values in today's show. Be sure you thank him. And thanks also to Andrew Zary, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.